You are listening to Think Theory Radio.
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 Radio. Radio.
Hello and welcome to Think Theory Radio, the show that brings you topics outside the mainstream realm of thought and ideas to make you think. And I'm your host, Damian Perdue, your guide on this scientifical ride of out-of-breath delights. And that's the breathless one, Paul C.
Yeah. I had to run from the control room.
Man of many hats today.
Yeah. Sweaty ones.
Yeah. Yeah, running in, you know, multiple studios.
It's kind of warm, too.
Well, you just ran in and out of the room, and you're wearing a hoodie.
Yeah, I'm wearing a hoodie.
Oh, and it is warm outside, yes.
A little humid.
A little summery day.
That, and I think they like to turn up the heat on the thermostat.
Trying to make us sweat it out.
Right.
That's how you produce the best radio, mm-hmm. when it's, like, extremely hot.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Cold radio would be boring.
Yeah.
Sterile.
Who wants cold radio? Yeah. Although the cold would help the radio frequencies travel farther.
Outside in
the
studio.
Right, not in the studio.
Yeah. Hot radio. Get your hot radio.
Hot radio. Coming in hot. And that has nothing to do with what today is. Although I guess technically temperature is part of science. Mm-hmm. Although it's not necessarily a... Although it could be a, you know, as climate change creeps in and we hit like 130 degrees, then it'll be a tales to astonish, mm-hmm. or an astonishing tale of deathly heat. Yes, today it's time again for Weird Science and Tales to Astonish. It's been a while since we've done it, actually. Longer than usual. Usually try to do it 4 or 5 weeks. I think it's been about 6. Maybe going on 7 weeks.
That's okay.
I know.
I know this is a great way to, you know, file all the stories that didn't have their own episodes or couldn't be grouped into an episode. You can kind of use up some mm-hmm. stories for people. But at the same time, you're giving quality content on the other days, too. I mean, we had interviews and you know, new ideas and, you know, special episodes for holidays.
Mm-hmm.
So Weird Science can wait.
Well, and the best thing, too, about, you know, giving it a little time to breathe.
Yeah.
And
go dig through the previous, like, 45 of them if you're missing Weird Science.
But also gives me time to accumulate.
Mm-hmm. A crew.
Yes. All the crazy experiments and theories that scientists are postulating. And strange inventions they're making. Like this one. Paul, do you want your own flamethrower robot dog?
No, but I'd like to see what it looks like.
Well, you can get one for $10,000. Actually, it's only $9,420.
After taxes, though, that would be
about 10 stacks. It's cheaper than a car.
Can I?
Well, some cars.
Finance a robot flamethrower dog.
I'm sure you could do it some way.
Okay. Put it on layaway, maybe?
And it's called the Terminator. Oh, this is real. And I don't understand why they invented this thing.
All right. If I make one stealing this patent, I'm going to call it Fire Dough. Fido,
I get it.
So you just kind of gave me that look like either I'm an idiot or you didn't get it.
That was the...
Yeah, I thought it was great. Better than Terminator. You don't even know what you're getting with that.
Well, I just feel like if you're calling it Terminator, okay, it's supposed to be created to, like, you know, help.
Sounds like a bad, like, 90s football player. The Terminator's going to come and get you.
Or like an 80s B-movie.
Yeah, there you go, yeah.
Which I actually just rewatched Repo Man the other day, that's a great 80s B-movie.
Yeah.
And, there's some interesting science in that movie. but I just feel like, okay, so it's the first ever flamethrower-wielding robot dog. And it's a quadruped robot with an ARC flamethrower mounted to its back, fueled by gasoline or napalm.
Yeah,
that's what you want, a napalm firing robot dog.
This is like kind of combining all the elements of the final scene of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Not to spoil it for you. It's been like 6 years.
Mm-hmm. But you could, and you can control it through your smartphone. That's the best part. It's got Bluetooth connectivity. And it's just, the company lists possible applications of the new robot as wildfire control and prevention, agricultural management, ecological conservation, snow and ice removal, and entertainment and SF, you know, special effects.
And if you got like puddles on the infield at your Little League game, just get right. The dog on it.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. In, you know, if you were selling this to, you know, like fire departments or something of this nature, you know, or especially like forest fire, you know, forest prevention kind of thing or whatever. But this is available to the public. And I mean, if you think
here
about
in
it,
the United States,
yes, it's made in Ohio. I mean, if you think about it, $9,000 is not that much. You know, it's that's accessible for a lot of people. It's like, I don't know why they would make that available to the public. It's just, I don't know. I don't
well,
get
I'll
it.
Be. There it is.
I mean, I guess you could buy a flamethrower. So why not a robot dog with a flamethrower?
Right, it's available on back order. Well, let's add it to the cart, see what happens.
I can just kind of see like all these rich people having those guard their mansions.
Okay. So if you want the dog, it's, you know, $9,420, you know, plus tax. But, you know, and I mean $9,420.
Yeah.
But if you just want like a flamethrower,
yeah.
You know, you don't need the fancy pants
robot.
Four-legged robot dog. You could just get a flamethrower for $699 to $899.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cheap.
Yeah. So that's it. If you really want one.
Oh, man. Yeah, so I don't know. We'll see if those
there's
be
a backpack add-on for $249. Maximize continuous firing time. The ARC flamethrower backpack holds up to 3.5 gallons of fuel.
Mm.
At this point, I feel like we're encouraging this.
Yes, so. Okay. Well, yeah.
I would like to give the
let's
disclaimer.
Let's switch the...
That,
right. Unless we're the, not...
Unless ThrowFlame wants to throw a lot of right. money at us.
Yes, I'm speaking out against this. Yes. I think we should, you know...
But until then, yeah,
this should be outlawed. Because who knows what else they're going to attach to these robot dogs? I don't want to think about it.
Lasers,
you know,
lasers and flames, and
mm-hmm.
little rockets.
Well, let's get something more positive.
That doesn't seem
going from
post-apocalyptic,
right? From flamethrowers to lasers, because you didn't mention laser. Mm-hmm. NASA just received a laser message. Beamed from a colossal 226 million kilometers away.
What?
Who would be beaming NASA a
yeah,
message?
Who would? Was it one of the telescopes or something?
Themselves.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah. You know, it's,
sorry to quash your hopes of aliens.
Well, no, some being would have to have the same technology that we just suddenly happen to be on right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could probably, if they were already watching us, they could figure out, like, oh, they're just using that. My kid has one of those. Radio frequencies, really? Lasers?
My grandpa talks about how great those used to be.
Yeah, but they this is the farthest distance they have sent a message through space. And it's 1.5 times the distance between the Earth and the Sun.
Hmm.
This is they're transmitting the data over the Deep Space Optical Communication System. And it's blown out what they thought they could do as well. They didn't realize they could do it from that far. So this will, you know, this will help for space travel and everything. We'll be able to communicate, or even just satellites. We can send out, you know, our probes and be able to communicate even farther. Which they just relinked. Voyager 2 was having problems sending. It got stuck. It was just kept sending like 01010101. They kind of, I guess they figured that out. And now it's kind of back to sending, which is amazing too. I mean, Voyager 2 is way past they even thought that it would go longer than it's been. And to even receive some kind of communication, even though it's very basic from out there, is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You know,
Science is wonderful.
Science.
Let's keep going with science. But first, let's go to Jim, because he might have wanted to talk about...
robot.
Jim, what's going on?
Well, that sounds like a perfect convention. They're all butt fired.
You're
going to do a lot of damage with that. Anyway, I was going to talk about, see, Mr. Science was the first science on television. The first was Mr. Science. I recall it had to be 1956, 57. He was on TV, and he would do these rudimentary science things like boil eggs and then, but that was my introduction to science was on television about 1957. I think it was Mr. Science. Maybe one of the other callers will know that are up there in age, but it was very interesting. Exploding things on the set and so on. But it was really rudimentary, but it was...
I have to look that up.
I've got to watch Mr. Wizard.
I think it might have been Mr. Wizard now that you mentioned it.
From 1951 to 1965.
And that's it, Mr. Wizard. That's it. Anyway, that was my first introduction to it. Anyway, thanks, Paulie. You guys have a good night.
Thanks, Jim.
Jim, thank you.
I have to go home and...
I remember watched
that after a couple
tubes. At least hearing about it. There was like an 80s reboot of it, I thought.
Yeah.
You know, the whole
It does
idea.
Sound very familiar, but then I keep thinking of, I think there was a cartoon. Like
Mr. Wizard! When it's been parodied so many times. Hey, kids, today we're going to learn about, hey, Timmy, could you do me a favor and hand me that beaker? You
know? Right. let's see. Let's keep... let's stay in space. And what about black spiders and a...
I heard about this on
Inca
Mars.
City.
Oh, okay.
An Incan city and black spiders on Mars.
Yeah, spiders on Mars, yeah.
What?
Yeah, what? It made sense once I heard the explanation.
I know.
The spiders.
I know. The headline sounds so much cooler than the actual...
That's this day and age. You got to get them clicks, baby. Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of black spiders spotted in mysterious Inca City on Mars.
It's misleading, but it's not, immoral. It's
no,
not,
and it's also like it's actually the kind of the nickname they've called these, which it's actually just buried carbon dioxide ice, which releases this dusty geysers of gas and creates these weird little
spider-like
carbon
patterns.
Dioxide. Yeah, that look like spiders. Mm-hmm. And then there's this formation that looks like an Incan city, like if you found, a laser image of like underneath the shrubs of some buried ruins. So
which I didn't realize that about the Incan ruins. Like I think I saw a picture that was like in like 1912, all of it was buried. And then nowadays it's like all carved out and you can tour it. And I guess I assumed it was preserved for a long time.
No, because the vegetation just grew over that stuff.
Which is totally believable. Mm-hmm. This is because someone has to maintain that consistently.
Right, so. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And there's tons of, and then now that, you know, we've talked about it too, with the laser imaging, they're finding so much more buried in places they didn't even know.
Easter Island heads have feet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they found a huge city in the middle of the Amazon that they didn't think.
Oh, wow.
People were even building, temples and stuff like that in the Amazon. At that time,
Isn't it crazy that in this day and age, there's still new discoveries on land?
I know. And it's interesting, too, because I think of like how the technology has allowed that, where it's not the old, Indiana Jones digging, stuff up. They're doing it from space with, satellites and lasers and oh, look at all that stuff underneath. We didn't know it was there. So who knows what further technology will even reveal even more.
Yeah.
We just don't know. Dun, 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 dun. You know what? Let's take a quick break right now, and then we'll come back with, have they figured out if there is a Planet 9 in our solar system? And black hole created in a lab. That and much more on Weird Science here on Think Theory Radio right after this. Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. This is Damien and Paul, and we're doing something different.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for Weird Science, we've never had a special guest commentator.
Yeah.
And we have one today. It's Mike Ravone.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Welcome on.
It's my pleasure.
And you've been on the show before, but it's been a while.
Yeah, it has been. It's been forever.
And you've never been on in this capacity.
No, I haven't.
And you showed up late.
I know.
So it's also
maybe
another.
It was planned for the second segment.
It was planned for the second segment. Yeah. No, I screwed it up. Ah. We'll edit that out post.
Oh, wait.
Dump it. Paul, dump that.
We're on the air? What do I do with my hands?
Right.
Don't swear with them.
Yeah. No swearing sign language, please. Too late. I figured what we'll do is, because usually, you know, I collect a myriad of stories in the strange realms of science and technology. And then I read from these articles, and then me and Paul riff and comment on them and make fun of them.
Oh, man.
And then by the end of the show, he realizes he talked about four different topics.
Right.
And had a whole stack.
And I had 20, which I actually do have like 20. Right? There's awesome. No way we're getting through it. But so this time, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the headline, and then I want your take on it before I tell you what it is.
Okay.
All right, so here we'll go with the first one. I did tease this one before the break. Planet Nine hypothesis gets new boost.
Planet Nine. Okay, so that makes me think of two things, really. It makes me think that they are maybe Pluto is going to be considered a planet again.
Mm.
Or did Pluto explode already? I don't know. or there's what is it, the Nibiru planet?
Oh, Nibiru.
The one of the big elliptical
that's close
orbit. Oh, so it's closer to the big.
Yes.
Oh man,
that is actually closest to what this is. It's the hypothetical extra planet, often referred to as Planet Nine or Planet X.
Yeah, Planet X. That's the one I was thinking of. The big makes the big elliptical orbit like every 2,000 years or something, supposedly, right?
Yeah. Well, it says 10,000 to 20,000 years.
Ah.
It goes, it takes to go. Well, that it takes to go around the sun. But they don't know if it's actually there. But now research teams at Caltech believe that they have found additional evidence to support this planet's existence. And the study co-author Michael Brown, professor of planetary astronomy at California Institute of Technology, says, "I think it is very unlikely that P9 does not exist. There are currently no other explanations for the effects that we see, nor for the myriad other P9-induced effects we see on the solar system." And he's talking about the different kind of gravitational pulls that are, you know, with other asteroids and different heavenly bodies.
Yeah, but I mean, so supposedly the last time this planet came around was what some people say was 10,000 years ago when the pyramids and the Sphinx were built, right?
That's a theory.
Yeah, maybe people from that planet built it.
Well, so when you bring up Nibiru, that is like, that's the whole, that's the other side of it. Now, this is like the scientifical side.
Ah, this is the hard science.
Yes, hard science. Which in 2015, research suggested that Planet Nine could be between 10,000 and 20,000 Earth years orbit. And its gravitational influence is thought to account for the unusual grouping of orbits observed among a collection of TNOs. And but the Nibiru one is, you know, that's the whole like Anunnaki alien, ancient origin theory that they.
I understand why they would name it Planet Nine, but then to also name it Planet X, which is like the Roman numeral for 10.
Well, it was probably Planet. I think it was Planet X first.
Yeah, when it was.
When Pluto was still a planet. Yeah. Right.
Poor old Pluto.
Oh, I think Neil deGrasse Tyson still wants it to be a planet. He pushes for the he's part of the pro Pluto planet group.
Glamour science.
It's just a dwarf planet. Yeah, glamour science. pop scientist.
He is a pop scientist.
So they're, you know, they've they've been gathering data there at Caltech, and they believe that they have computer simulations that shows that there has to be a planet there. And they're building a new telescope in Chile, which they believe once that's done, which should be done next year or so. I believe it's called, I don't know if it's the Vera Rubin one or not, but once that gets completed, they believe that it will solve the mystery of Planet X, because they will be able to peer farther out into the solar system.
Oh, wow.
And see if it's there. Unless, of course, it just happens to come colliding into our planet, like the conspiracy theorists think it will happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we'll really know it's there.
Yeah, or come close.
Yeah, come close enough to disturb everything and wipe us off. What if it, like, if the planet could come just close enough, and then they could just, you know, the aliens from that planet just drop down.
Yeah, just jump off onto Earth.
Yeah. And we could jump up.
I like it.
And speaking of aliens, my favorite Harvard professor, Avi Loeb. You know Avi Loeb?
I'm familiar with Avi Loeb, yes.
You know, he believes that the Oumuamua comet, or the asteroid, or whatever it was, the one that the interstellar traveling
that it showed,
visitor.
That it at least showed potential that it could be created other than natural.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah. Like it didn't have the same kind of effects that a natural asteroid would be, the way it was floating through the solar system and the shape and the way it emitted the gases and stuff like that. But now he's saying that he believes UFOs could have traveled to Earth via extra dimensions that CERN scientists are trying to unlock.
Huh. Interesting.
So anytime you can combine CERN, which is, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar.
The Large Hadron Collider over there in Switzerland.
Yeah.
The.
We have a collider not too far from here, too.
Yeah, Fermilab.
Yeah.
I've had, you know, Dan Hooper works at Fermilab, comes on the show. And that Fermilab was the biggest one for a while, until CERN.
Yeah.
And so, Paul stepped out, but, you know, Avi Loeb, the Harvard professor who believes...
Avi, yeah.
Yeah.
No, actually, I do remember this name now.
He now, he has been saying that he believes that UFOs can travel through extra dimensions, and some of these might be ones that CERN are trying to unlock.
Okay. I would imagine that we're just barely scratching the surface right now of whatever that information will be.
Oh, yeah. And it actually, there was the guy, so the whistleblower from the Pentagon, the UFO investigator. What was his name? Grush?
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
He mentioned that, too. If you look at the transcript, he very briefly, though, because he keeps saying in the congressional hearings or whatever, he kept bringing up, because they kept saying, well, extraterrestrial. He's like, well, I don't want to say that. I just want to, because
I do remember this.
He was saying, we don't know for sure if they're not from this planet or whatever. But then he mentioned the possibility of them being from higher dimensions. Okay. So now the concept is basically that, you know, this has a lot to do with like string theory, and that there's more dimensions that we can't perceive, which makes sense, right? And you know, we can only perceive three dimensions. We exist in four dimensions, if you count, you know, space time. And
oh, I count them.
You got to count it, man. But the CERN is trying to figure out these hidden dimensions, and there possibly might be like six other dimensions that they're trying to find, and.
Wow.
Avi Loeb was saying that he believes with this quantum mechanics that this is possibly the technology that the UFOs are using to come here, which kind of would make sense if you think about just in the way of we're not getting any signals from them, you know, from deep space, and we're not getting any signals from them, you know, like flying through the solar system and landing on our planet, right? Like if they were full disclosure and they were telling us everything, there should be some kind of like radar signal, some kind of frequencies that we're picking up if they're coming in from other solar systems.
Yeah.
Like they did with the Oumuamua.
Well,
right?
Yeah, potentially what we can absorb and understand could really be the most generic version of the universe too.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, for sure.
It could be like we just can't grasp. So we could think we just think in our minds, oh, yeah, something would travel via some type of craft from mm-hmm. one place to another when...
Yeah, someone... Well, especially...
These guys, that's, like, so rudimentary, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. He was saying that earlier.
Well, like if, like, we're colorblind, but everyone else can see the color in the universe, you know, yeah. like, using that as an example, or, like, you know, we can't smell the universe, but they can, or whatever, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Yeah. Something like... Just not literally that.
He just made me think of the Futurama, the smelloscope.
Right. That's right.
But yeah, I mean, it makes sense if they're more advanced, or especially if they've been, you know, like if a civilization existed for a billion years as opposed to our meager, barely a million. I mean, really our civilization only exists for, what, 10,000 years, you know, and that's not yeah. even that. And industrial.
And we aren't even that civilized
no,
on top of it.
Not at all. And then if you count, like, in the industrial version of us, it's only, what, 200 years?
Yeah.
So if there was a civilization that was even 500,000 years older than us, imagine the advance, how advanced they would be. Let alone if their minds and bodies could perceive ultra dimensions. You know, the way we evolved is only to perceive these three dimensions. If they could evolve just to perceive six dimensions, who knows what they could create?
Us.
Us.
Mind blown.
Now, speaking of different theories on space propulsion.
Okay.
Here's one. Hold on, it's a long headline. NASA's veterans' propellantless propulsion drive that physics say shouldn't work just produced enough thrust to overcome Earth's gravity. What do you think about that one?
Oh, let's see. could you read that again? That was a long headline.
NASA veterans' propellantless propulsion drive that physics say shouldn't work just produced enough thrust to overcome Earth's gravity.
So it's something that creates propulsion without any type of gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
And not
any kind of propellant.
So
it's propellantless.
That would include propellers.
No propellers.
No propellers, no propellant.
But they do have propulsion.
Well, yeah, that... So it seems like it would have something to do with magnets. I would just have to guess. It'd have to be some type of...
That's kind of close.
Like magnet, anti-gravity type of... They've figured out how to...
It's electrostatic.
Ah.
At least that's, you know, what they're... They don't want to reveal everything, you know.
Yeah.
But it's a Dr. Charles Bueller. Bueller. So NASA engineer and co-founder of Exodus Propulsion Technologies has revealed that his company's propellantless propulsion drive appears to defy the known laws of physics. And this guy's a veteran of programs like the Space Shuttle, International Space Station, Hubble Telescope, current NASA DUST program. And he works with a team of very highly advanced scientists.
I feel like this is one of those like mystery patents where... You know
what's funny is the article, it talks about his patent because it says that once they released the information about this, that all of a sudden all these other companies started coming out and saying, yeah, we got a propulsionless drive, too.
Yeah.
We're working on one, too. And he's like, well, that's strange that.
Yeah, I think I may have heard of this guy before because it's like the patents came out like a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then people are like, what is this? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And they've been working on it for decades. And they didn't think that electrostatics would be the key to it. And now they're figuring out. Now, they've only done it, you know, in the lab. So they're trying to get money to actually do it in space.
Or so they say.
Yeah. They've already done it.
It's the triangle UFO.
Yeah. there was a good... I was trying to find this line because it was kind of funny what he said about the actual... Here it is. It says, you can't deny this. There's not a lot to this. You're just charging up Teflon, copper tape, and foam, and you have this thrust. So that's all we need to do it. Some Teflon, some copper tape, some foam. We got a propellantless drive. I don't know if that's how that works.
Two of those three things in my house right now.
Teflon? So that's an interesting thing, because it's, one, it would obviously would advance space exploration tremendously, but also it would kind of like create a whole fundamental part of physics, like a whole new force in physics, if this turns out to be true.
Yeah.
So we shall see.
That would be some weird science right there. That would change science. Nice.
Man, you missed the flamethrower dog one.
Oh, I saw that. It only costs like almost
that's what I said. It's like not that expensive.
Yeah.
It's cheaper than most cars. But here's another weird thing that they're supposedly building this year. Is Earth's black box. What do you think that is?
That seems like something that would... record basically like kind of like the overall history of mankind up to this point, as far as we know it, and sort of like maintained keeping track of like scientific discoveries and things like that. But I would assume it'd have to work via the internet or something.
That's pretty close.
I was thinking like how it would end too. Whatever documentation of
that's kind of like more what it is. Yeah,
the doomsday.
It's created to constantly document climate change, giving it an unbiased account of events that led to Earth's demise.
So it'll be here once we're all gone.
Yeah.
The point? So it'll then, just if there's be here and someone else can come and
and figure out. Oh, USB look at what they, that's what these dummies did.
Yeah, yeah. Scribbling on a mountain. What are they doing? Like
they're building this huge thing. It looks kind of like the monolith from 2001, except it's on its side.
Okay.
But it's this big thing, and it's in Tasmania. Which I thought was just an interesting place.
A great place to put it, yeah, because that's where they're going to be, that tiny little island below the giant continent of Australia. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although that's kind of a good place because you want to put it somewhere where people won't mess with it.
I suppose.
You know.
But my question would be, how do we, current mankind, really know the destructive force of Earth and the entire universe to where we could build something that we are confident would last into the future like that?
That's true.
This reminds me of the Carl Sagan like golden record or whatever, you know, like, like they're going to have a turntable or something to play this thing.
Exactly.
Or even interpret it or understand it.
If someone did find it, that's what I was like, what would they do?
I mean,
what if all of mankind was wiped out? And what if something like that actually already exists? Mm-hmm. We've already found it and threw it in the trash or something like that. Or we just can't wrap our head around it.
Yeah.
You know?
Or the ocean's flooded and it just got covered.
Yeah.
I just watched a limited series on Netflix that was, and I don't remember the name now because I watched too much stuff.
See, for me, go ahead, sorry.
No, but it was about the, and that's, you know, it's probably, spoiler alert, they keep getting this, this message from deep space, and they think it's someone in it, you know, that goes out, you know, they're in the space station or whatever, and she starts hearing this recording of someone talking to her. It's like, hello, hello, hello. And she could tell that it's, you know, that, well, they took our voice and they're trying to communicate with us, you know. Long story short, in the end, they find out that it's actually just Voyager got sent back to us.
Oh,
so Voyager comes and it crashes. So they think that this alien ship is going to crash, you know, land on Earth. And there's, you know, of course, all the, you know, secret society people come and they're trying to, you know, the military and all this. And then no alien ship comes. It turns out, but it's Voyager.
Wow.
Back. So the end of it is they believe that some aliens someone did find it. And then they're like, they take your space garbage bag.
Yeah.
What if it was a game of catch, though? What if they're like, hey, send something.
Right. Send something else. Yeah. But it just made me think of that. Maybe they were like, what is this? I don't know what to do with this. Get this out of here.
You must have lost this.
Yeah, right. What is this round thing? You work with physical things?
I guess we should take a quick break.
When we come back...
What's going on when we come back?
Oh, we got to talk about the black hole created in a lab.
Oh.
And what about Pink Floyd, How Does It Sound Through Brainwaves?
I am anxiously anticipating both.
And maybe DNA-infused computer chips.
Ooh.
Oh, and I got to get to this dude who lived 100 days underwater.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
David
so
Blaine.
We got to fit
Blaine
those. That and much more on Think Theory Radio, right after. Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. This is Damien, and today we're getting weird. We got Mike Ravone in the studio.
Weird.
Guest commentary. Because today it's time for... And also... Yes.
Nice.
And here's an astonishing tale. There's this man who spent a record 100 days underwater and claims it de-aged him 20 years.
Okay.
And gives proof.
Huh.
How are you going to prove that you're going to be 20 years younger?
I don't know. Pictures? I don't, there's one weird license? Picture which is him like this, though. Not that
so,
it is.
So, living underwater. So, he was in a capsule of some sort or a room, or he just was underwater in a wetsuit.
Just a series of scuba gear or whatever, just like oxygen constantly. I don't know.
Yeah.
constantly scuba.
Yeah, it was. So, he spent 100 days last year. Dr. Joseph DeTuri challenged himself to spend 100 days in a habitat located 30 feet under a Florida lagoon.
So he wasn't coming in contact with the water?
No.
He was just under it in a room?
No, yeah, he was basically like in a station submarine or underwater. He was in Sea Lab.
Yeah.
Fair, all right.
You know, he's a scientist, he's former naval officer. He stayed in a small 9-meter by 9-meter room that he had to scuba dive to get to. His goal was to research the type of medicine that can help deliver oxygen to the human body under high pressures by helping it grow new blood vessels.
Oh, okay. So what proof does he have? He says he has proof. Do
yes.
we have proof of the proof?
Proof of the proof is, let's see. He says his telomeres lengthened.
His telomeres?
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
I actually got younger when I was under the water.
So your telomeres is showing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
He says he's 56, but his intrinsic biological age was 44. When I got out of the water, my intrinsic age was 34.
What? What is... Okay. What is an intrinsic age?
Telomeres, a compound structure at the end of a chromosome.
There you go. See? And his telomeres lengthened so that it helped him de-age. I mean, I could kind of see it because being underwater is similar to being in space.
Just like the pressure that's at the
yeah.
I know that's like.
Well, you know how when you go in space, like the vacuum and like you age less than people on Earth. So maybe being underwater has the same effect. As long as you're not in the water.
Well, I also think the calming effect of not having to deal with the chaotic society on the surface, you know, you kind of like calm, you're doing your own research, kind of going at your own pace.
I like that.
Unless, you know, I think if I was doing that, I would be living with the fear of that thing collapsing on me while I'm inside.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
100 days, too. That's a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. In the madness of
three and a half. Yeah.
But I'm sure there had to be some sort of communication.
Sea madness. Well, yeah, he's. I mean, he was talking. He actually did classes from down there. He was like a professor.
Yeah.
He was like teaching high school classes.
Yeah, I feel like there'd be other, you know, elements at play as well, like diet, exercise.
Yeah.
He probably has like a different exercise routine while he's down there and is more.
Well, I'm sure he's probably not, getting smashed every night either.
Yeah, yeah.
So it probably helps not aging him.
Every other night. No, right.
He only brought a little, just enough for the week, just the weekends.
Sitting on the couch drinking IPAs watching Netflix.
We probably wouldn't even know. Is it the weekend? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
So did you happen to find it? Do you have a playable version of that?
Sorry, no. I was still looking through the...
Oh, it's all good. So I'll get to this. If you could find that, because I want to play the
Pink Floyd brainwave. Black hole.
Yes. Scientists created a black hole in a lab to test a theory. Then it started glowing extremely bright.
That's the opposite of what I expected from a black hole.
Mm-hmm. Recently, scientists have created simulated black holes to help their understanding of the phenomenon. And these scientists have used a chain of atoms in a single file to simulate the event horizon of a black hole and experience what is known as the Hawking radiation, named after Stephen Hawking, just in case you didn't know.
You know, I don't know. Sometimes I feel that, like, there's such a broad gap between regular society and what's going on in the scientific world.
Oh, for sure.
And I just feel like that could be time better spent figuring something else out. I don't know what you would need to know about a black hole.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, as far as I know, right, it just sucks everything in. why create one?
Yeah, I mean, it's a microscopic one, so I know, like, there's probably people that are like, they're going to end the world.
Yeah.
But these are, like, microscopic. Like, you can't really... I mean, it's possible something could go wrong and swallow the whole Earth, but
I mean, let's say we figure out the behaviors of a black hole.
Yeah.
What good is that to us?
Well, we can figure out what it is, because we don't even really know what a black hole is. So if we're able to create one in a lab, we can actually figure out what a black hole is, and maybe we can warp through it, like create a wormhole and go to the other side.
Now, I'm just one idiot, but isn't there a chance that if you make a black hole, that it could possibly expand and, like, suck us all in?
I mean, that's the hope.
That's the hope. What good is discovering it if that's...
It seems that it could expand forever. Yeah.
Just end it all.
Hey, we found it, you guys.
No, like I said, it's a microscopic one. In order to do something that... you know, that would have that effect, you would need like CERN, like the particle accelerator, you would need one like the size of the solar system in order to create a black hole that would swallow us. Now, I mean, obviously, you know, theoretically anything's possible. It could, this small little...
Everything is possible.
Yes, everything is possible. Anything is possible. Everything.
Everything. It's possible.
So, you know, it could happen, but
why not?
What if you could create black holes that, like, were like garbage disposals?
That
would help. Because think about how much garbage there is in the world, and we just throw it into a black hole.
This seems like a Rick and Morty episode.
I think it might have been. Or Futurama. It was one of those, right?
It could be.
Should we take a mystery caller?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Let's go mystery caller from the 847. Hello, who is this?
This is Tim in Lombard.
Hey, what's up, Tim?
Hello, Tim.
Let me take you off speaker. That's probably better.
Yeah, you sound good.
Hello?
Yeah, okay. We got you.
All right. Your underwater guy, I have a theory as to why he's aging less, and people aren't going to want to hear this, but in fact, he's exposed to a lot less radiation. Basically above the Earth, I mean, it's above the water, we're exposed to radiation. We fly in airplanes. We're getting the dose almost the equivalent of a nuclear worker. People don't want to talk about that. You get a lot of radiation from space.
Right.
A lot of radiation.
I didn't want
That's
to hear
true.
That.
That's
true. Those astronauts actually, it would say when they're in deep space flight, going all the way out to the moon and back, they would get flashes because cosmic, you know, particles would be hitting their optic nerves and actually giving them flashes from those particles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and even airline pilots, they have a higher rate of cancer because they're closer to the, you know, radiation from the sun.
Wow.
You know what occupation has one of the lowest rates of cancer?
I don't know.
do, Nuclear Submariners.
I knew it had to be something down, but I wasn't sure what it
was. I was going to say coal miner before.
Although
I was like,
that's interesting,
no, that's
though.
Totally not the answer.
Yeah. But that's interesting because it's nuclear.
Yeah, different type of cancer than I'm thinking right. here from radiation, you know.
That's
they're shielded from the stuff. But in terms of weird science, just kind of bring us one step closer to Judgment Day. Ukrainians are working on drones. They're totally autonomous, so they're not affected by jamming from the Russians.
Huh. Oh, nice. That's
one step closer to Judgment Day.
Yes, I know. And combine that with the flame-throwing robot dog. That's
yeah.
There you go, man. I need some sharks with laser beams, and the world is doomed.
Well, after,
you know, they did that with dolphins. They tried to attach lasers onto dolphins.
Yeah. It was in a James Bond movie. Yeah.
That NASA did it though.
Well, after talking to Tim,
great show, guys.
All right, thanks, Tim.
Thank you. I'm glad that I just moved into a garden apartment now. I feel a little bit better about that.
Yeah,
a little closer,
a little safer,
a little lower. Yep,
it does make sense. I could see that.
I got Pink Floyd a few.
Oh, yeah. So let's get to that story. Let me read the headline here. This is pretty interesting. I love any kind of weird sounds. Weird science and weird sounds.
Scientists
extracted a Pink Floyd song from someone's brainwaves.
Oh, wow.
Here's what it sounds like.
All right. Well, that's
just what the headline says.
For everyone at home, it's Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall, Part 1. So this was the sample that it took from the original Pink Floyd version.
Just a brick in the wall.
Can you turn it up?
All right, so that's the sample of the actual song. Here's the brainwave version.
Wow. That's pretty nuts.
I like it better.
Yeah.
Well, but this is a fairly new technology.
Yeah.
Yes, I would assume.
Because, I mean, you can just hear
it
from the sound of it.
It took a decade of research to do that.
Within 20 more years, you'll be able to just basically take people's whatever they listen to be able to regenerate it sounds like.
Crazy. Yeah, the applications. You could go the scary route of just like.
So they just took a person's brainwaves.
Mm-hmm.
And then what? Is there a machine they run this thing through?
Yeah, computer, the help of AI, of course.
Who were they using too? Was it someone that's like kind of musically inclined? Or was it just someone that's like, I like Pink Floyd, I don't really play music. So they're trying to like sing it back to themselves. I don't know. It's like, are you mentally recording the song when you enjoy it, or is it just like your reinterpretation of it back as a as a brain? You know what I'm saying? So would it ever be as accurate as the original?
I see what you're saying. But so is what we heard, is that like live reading as they are hearing the song?
I have no idea what was that.
It's a recording of it. It's a live reading, but it's recorded.
Okay, so it's like they're listening to the song.
Yeah, and then they have
wow. Gotcha, okay.
That's still pretty
nuts. It's still like their interpretation of it, even if it's being
for sure.
To them.
But it's like so. It's basically a neurologist and psychology professor, Robert Knight. Him and his fellow scientists, they believe they've begun to crack the code on interpreting not only the content of human brain waves, but the meaning behind them as well. So that's part of what this experiment was for.
Wow. And AI is involved.
Of course. Of course.
You gotta watch out for that, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, because we all are thinking about AI, right? It's probably eventually going to evolve to be smarter and better than people.
I kind of
have loose theories, like, smart watches and things like that are like now super popular. So I feel like that is like somehow going to be connected to the machines in the future, and they're like, you know what, you're not worthy of being a human slave, right? Because like you don't get enough steps in every day,
right. And it just like hits you with a burst. All right, I think we have time for one more, probably.
Yeah, let's do it.
And this one, you're gonna love this one.
Well, I love them all so far.
physicists studying SARS COVID virus.
Uh-oh.
Or a COV2 virus. Believes he has found hints we are living in a simulation. You didn't think it was going to go that way, did you?
No, I didn't.
Of course we're living in a simulation.
A physicist studying mutations on the SARS-CoV-2 virus claims to have found evidence for a new law of physics termed the second law of infodynamics.
Huh.
And that it could indicate we are living in a simulated universe.
So now what infodynamics would be is pretty interesting. What are infodynamics?
It's basically it's information. It's the dynamics of information, and that kind of the universe holds information, and that there is information entropy.
That everything actually consists of information,
mm-hmm.
and it's just the information we just process it differently.
Yeah, when
how we see colors, for example, and touch and have feel.
Yeah, and like, you know, the heat of the universe, the energy of the universe is dissipating, and that's entropy, right? So while entropy tends to increase over time, information entropy tends to decrease, according to the scientist Vopson, who came up with this theory. An illustration of this would be the heat death of the universe. But the information entropy goes lower so that there's more information. So he's saying with the way this virus has mutated, it's kind of showing the opposite of like universal entropy. So it only would make sense if we were in a simulated universe, supposedly.
Ah.
Yeah. We'll have to get into it more on another episode because we ran out of time.
Oh.
But it was fun. A good episode of Weird Science and Tales to Astonish, Astonish. Thanks, Microphone, for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
We'll do it again sometime. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for our callers. We'll be back again next week and every Saturday, 6 and 7 p.m. right here on WCPT 820 Think Theory Radio.